Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Broadcasting from the Shaw's Star Market Studios, the exclusive home for the return of Red Sox baseball in Boston. This is Sports Radio 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1 Lawrence Boston, a Radio.com sports station. Time now for the Brian Barrett Show on EEI.
JD was swinging the bat really well when we first started the season, and then he got cold. But when we first started, he was really good. As you know, he was all good through training camp and then started the first couple games. And then for whatever reason, you know, guys get a little out of whack. He's there right now, but he works at it. He'll figure it out and he'll find it. He's always that consistent guy that you can count on. So.
All right. That's the manager, at least the interim manager of your Boston Red Sox. After they fell last night, 5-2 to the Yankees, J.D. Martinez had the night off after he's been slumping, just like most of the guys in the Red Sox lineup have been slumping, save Christian Vasquez. And now it looks like Bogarts is turning on a little bit. But all in all, most of the lineup has been slumping, especially the main guys that you expected to have big seasons. Devers, Martinez, Bogarts, most of those guys have not put up the numbers that we've been accustomed to seeing with those guys. And this is what sticks out to me. The Red Sox right now are 19th in runs per game, 4.33. Last year, by the way, they were third in baseball in runs per game. If you take out the one outlier game, which was opening day, they're averaging 3.25 runs per game. That would rank 27th in all of baseball. Oh, yeah, and by the way, in nine games this season, they haven't scored in the first inning once. Last year, and in 18, they were sixth in first inning runs. That is such an advantage for teams. When you get off to a quick start, especially when you know your pitching isn't great, to just give them some breathing room, give them something to work with. And that's what we expected with this team, but we haven't seen that at all. This team cannot score in the first inning of a game. They haven't done it once the entire season. And obviously, they can't figure out the leadoff spot. That's a massive issue for this team. And for some reason, Ron Renneke and Chaim Bloom, I don't know if he's making the calls, but Ron Renneke obviously is putting the final touches on the lineup, as he mentioned earlier this week. They continue to put Benintendi at the leadoff spot. He was hitting leadoff last night. I don't understand the concept behind this. It was proven last year he's uncomfortable in that particular position. And by the way, on the road, he's even worse. So when he's the first hitter of a game last year, 1-for-42 in the first inning. Last night, you go on the road to Yankee Stadium, and he's hitting first in the lineup. It's just dumb. He hit .256 last year in the leadoff spot. Horrible. And when he went to second in the lineup last year, he actually hit .297. So it's very easy. Like, this is supposed to be an analytically driven organization now with Chaim Bloom coming in. I don't know what analytics tell you that Andrew Benintendi should be hitting leadoff. He's horrible right now. The guy's so bad that every time he strikes out, he goes down to a knee. He looks horrible at the plate, and for some reason, they keep trotting him out to the leadoff spot because the analytics say so. That's essentially what Ron Reddicke said a couple of days ago. It makes no sense to me. So if the analytics say you should hit a lefty leadoff against a righty, can't you go with another lefty? I'm not telling you Verdugo's been great this season, but he's been better than Andrew Benintendi. So can't you just go with another lefty? Do you have to choose the lefty that stinks? It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. But the biggest point for me is the offense has been the problem for this team. We knew coming into the season, we all knew that the pitching was going to suck. But we said the reason that the Red Sox were going to have a chance to get into the postseason, which, oh, by the way, there's 8 teams getting in the American League. So think about how embarrassing that is if the Red Sox don't get in, which does anybody think they're getting in right now? Considering what their schedule looks like and considering how they're playing, I don't know how anybody can confidently say, oh, yeah, I just don't think they're getting one of those 8 spots. They've been unwatchable at times this year. But you're 19th in runs. So I knew Ryan Weber was going to suck. He's 29th. He's on his 4th team. He never made an opening day roster before. Okay, besides the fact that it did piss me off that the Red Sox were trying to push him down our throat that he was some great player. We knew he wasn't going to be good. Martin Perez is a journeyman. And I understand he had a nice outing last time. Great, but he's a number 5 starter. That's what he is. Last year, he had an ERA north of 5. So that would have been a great start the other day. It was a great start for him, but it's a great start for the 5th guy in your rotation. That's what he is. I never expected Martin Perez to be this key contributor on this team. And then you start to think about, oh, well, Zach Godley. I'm not going to get mad at Zach Godley. Nobody wanted him, so the Red Sox picked him up. I'm not going to get pissed off that Godley gave up a couple of home runs to Aaron Judge and Gio Urshela last night. I'm not. This is what I expect to happen from these guys. They're not good. But the bottom line is this. We are misdirecting our anger. And I was guilty of that in the first week of the season. I will admit that. I was looking at the pitchers. I was looking at Ryan Weber, and I was looking at Godley, and I was looking at Perez, and all these guys, with the exception of Evaldi, who's actually pitched well in both starts this season. The bottom line is, where this team was going to be successful was having one of the better offenses in baseball, like they had in 18 and like they had in 19. And I don't think it's just, oh, Mookie's not here, so the offense isn't good anymore. No, all these guys aren't hitting. Devers is at 281, JD's at 219, and Bogarts is at 241. So I thought we'd be in a situation. This is what I thought would happen this year. Is I felt as if the Red Sox were going to have this really good offense and they would lose some games or lose games because their pitching was just atrocious. And I felt like what was going to happen is I was going to feel bad for the offensive stars on this team. The JD Martinez's of the world, the Xander Bogarts's of the world, the Rafael Devers of the world. I felt like this is going to be a situation, if you remember back between 2009 and 2013 with the Patriots, where Brady had no defense. Remember that from about 09 to 13? Until Chandler Jones came into his own and Hightower came into his own. And then in 14, you picked up a guy like Revis. And then the defense completely changed and you were back to being an elite defense again like you were in the first dynasty for the Patriots, right? With the Brewskis, the Ted Johnsons of the world, with that group, Mike Vrabel, right? All those guys. But from 09 to 13, the defense is really bad and Brady had to carry them. I felt like this is what was going to happen with this Red Sox team, is the offense was going to be so good, they were going to remain in contention, not to beat out the Yankees for the division, but they would be a tough team to play day in and day out because of this great offense, and they were going to be held back by the pitching staff. And I felt like what we were going to be doing is having conversations about how you feel bad for these guys in terms of the Bogarts and all these guys because their pitching sucks so bad that they're blowing games late or they're not getting starting pitching. But the offense has been the bigger problem than the pitching. We expected the pitching not to be great. And quite frankly, they've given up 5 runs and 5 runs in back-to-back games. And I know that's not good, but I expected that this Red Sox team was going to be able to score 6 runs at times this year, didn't you? And at least get off to better starts than not scoring 1 run in the first inning through the first 9 games of the season. So in my mind, what we're doing is we're misdirecting our anger and we're looking at Ryan Weber. It's not his fault he stinks. He's never been good. Zach Godley has not been good the past couple of years. It's not his fault he stinks. But it is Bogarts, Devers, and J.D. Martinez's fault that they have not played well this season. That's on them. And one thing I want to point out with J.D. Martinez, and I understand that he's in the 2 spot in the order and he's unfamiliar with that position in the order. But this is what J.D. Martinez said about hitting in the 2 spot. This is at the other night after the 5-1 loss. Quote, "It's a little different. The whole routine changes. Obviously, I don't get as many at-bats to watch the pitcher early on. Usually, I have the first 2 to 3 guys to kind of time them up a bit. That's probably a different part about it." So JD's essentially saying, hey, usually in the first inning, I get to see 2 guys ahead of me or 3 guys ahead of me, and now I'm only seeing 1 guy ahead of me. Well, the first inning hasn't been an issue for JD. He's 2 for 6 in the first inning when he's hitting in the 2-hole. So that's 333. Plus, he has a walk. So he has a 428 on-base percentage in the first inning of the game and a 333 batting average. So I don't know what J.D. Martinez is talking about. Like, the 2-hole has been an issue for him to start games. It hasn't. It's been the rest of the game. So He did reference the fact that he doesn't have the video like he usually does, where you can go back to the video room. He doesn't have that anymore. Now, that is a serious issue, obviously, for J.D. Martinez. But for him to basically make an excuse about, oh, I'll hit anywhere in the order, I'll carry the bat bag, etc., it's not true. You're complaining in the same sentence. You're complaining about hitting in the two spot when you've been fine in the first inning. So the fact that J.D. Martinez has not showed up to the season, I'm not making any excuses for that player. He's supposed to be one of the great offensive players in all of Major League Baseball, and he hasn't shown up. It's not because he's hitting in the two spot. It's the fact that, okay, maybe the video thing is real for J.D. Martinez, but get it together. Figure it out. I'm sorry, nobody else in baseball has that luxury either. So it's affecting you so much more than any other player. And I get that he's methodical with his approach at the plate, but sorry, you got to adjust. Figure it out. Figure it out. And then another thing I wanted to mention real quickly is I asked the question, where the hell is the leadership with this team? So the only thing I've heard this year, as this team has been flat out atrocious, they had two nice games against the Mets. Congratulations. This is what I've only heard Kevin Pillar say, the excuses are over. And this is after they lost on Tuesday night to the Mets. He's played here, what, in seven games? He's been here for nine games as a member of the Red Sox. How is he the only guy on this team that has said anything? We haven't heard about anything going on behind closed doors, and I get it, they can't really meet. But how is Kevin Pillar the only guy saying that? Who barely has any equity, if you will, in this organization. He's barely played here. And he's the guy that says something? Where's Xander Bogaerts? Where's J.D. Martinez? Where's Rafael Devers? And I get it, maybe it's, and Devers is young, but with Bogaerts and Martinez, I get it, maybe it's not in their DNA to get on guys. But at some point, somebody's got to do it. Because Ron Renicki is the interim manager. He's the substitute teacher, if you will. And it was in Alex Cora's DNA. If Alex Cora was pissed off about something, he'd let you know. Just like he called out Devers a couple of years, or last year after he made the error against the White Sox that would go on to lose them the game. But where is the leadership on this team in terms of the players to call people out and say, we got to be better? David Ortiz famously would yell at guys. Remember, he did it in a playoff series. We saw Chris Sale do it during the World Series a couple of years ago where he was getting on guys. But where is the fire within this organization? Where is the fire from the guys that are supposed to be star players on this team? I don't see it whatsoever. And when I look at a guy like Rafael Devers right now, one thing that stuck out to me last night that was just really unforgivable from Devers, who I understand that he's still young and all this, but we can't make excuses for the guy. Eighth inning last night, he hammers a ball down the line, the left field line. Easily should have been a double. Easily should have been a double. But he took his time coming out of the box, and he only gets a single out of that. That's the type of crap that cannot happen. The fact that he's not running down the first baseline to take second base, that's an issue. That's an issue that somebody needed to get on him about. And maybe somebody did behind closed doors, but we didn't hear anything about it. Somebody needed to tell Rafael Devers, that's not all right. We understand you're a young player and all this, but that is unacceptable. Jogging out of the box in a game where you're trying to come back and win, and the fact that that wasn't a double and it's just a single, that's an issue. And that's kind of a summary of the season for the Red Sox. That type of crap should not be happening. I don't care how bad the team is. I don't care how bad the pitching is. That is not acceptable. That cannot happen. Because then what happens is when Bogaerts comes up, he hits into a fielder's choice. So instead of there being a runner on third base with one out, there's a runner on first base with one out. That's what happens in that inning because Rafael Devers does not run out of the box. And that, to me, is something that you need somebody internally, whether it be Bogaerts, who I know they're good friends, whether it be J.D. Martinez. Somebody has to go to the player and say, listen, man, this is not acceptable. You cannot be doing this. This type of crap's been happening all season long with the Red Sox. By the way, Devers is hitting 182 with no home runs, a 532 OPS. And I understand it's an uncomfortable thing to bring up, but does he look like he's in good shape? And I understand he's never going to look like Mike Trout, who's ripped out of his mind, or Aaron Judge, who's ripped out of his mind. He's never going to look like that guy. It's just not his body type. But he looks significantly bigger this year than he did a season ago. And let's not dismiss the fact that he was not ready for the season when it began. Rafael Devers had, what, three errors in the first four games of the season where he's throwing the ball, airmailing the ball over to first base? He had one error that cost the Red Sox a run earlier this season when Perez was on the mound against the Baltimore Orioles because he was sloppy with his defense. So at some point, there's got to be some leadership, and somebody's got to get on Rafael Devers. And last year, that guy was here. His name was Alex Cora, the manager of the team. Ron Renicki's not that type of guy. So you need to see somebody take this team and be a leader of this team. And you thought Bogarts would be that guy, right? Bogarts is the guy that went to the front office and told the front office, hey, I want to be here. Let's get a contract done. He told Scott Boras, let's get a contract done. So at some point, there has got to be some accountability for the guys in the field and the guys in the lineup. And not all the blame should be shifted at the pitching staff. What did you expect this pitching staff to be? Now, the one critique I would have, this is about the organization in general, and I got into this a little bit with Rob Bradford. Where the hell's Brian Johnson? So you're telling me Brian Johnson can't get a chance to start games on this team? Are you kidding me? Have you seen what Ryan Weber has done? Did you see what happened last night with Zach Godley? You're telling me Brian Johnson isn't good enough to get an opportunity to start. I'm not telling you you got to keep him up for the entire season, but you're telling me he's not good enough to get an opportunity to start for this Red Sox team. I'm not talking about the Red Sox team that had Sale and David Price and Rick Porcello and Erod and Nathan Eovaldi. I'm talking about the Red Sox team that has Martin Perez, Nathan Eovaldi, who's good, Ryan Weber, Zach Godley, Hall got a start. Okay, and tonight Austin Bryce is the opener. You're telling me that Brian Johnson isn't good enough to start on this Red Sox team. That's a joke. That's a joke. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until Red Sox pregame at 6:05. I do want to get into one other thing with the Red Sox. Eduardo Rodriguez, it was announced yesterday by Chaim Bloom that he is done for the season. Obviously, rough news for the Red Sox. So what should Chaim Bloom be doing as we get closer to the trading deadline? Should they move on from J.D. Martinez? I'll tell you next here on WEI, and we'll get you trending in just a second.
The Greg Hill Show, morning 6 to 10. Now here's what's trending on WEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com. Oh, man, rough one for the Bruins as they're now down 4-1 with about 13 minutes and 44 seconds left in the third period. Chris Wagner, the lone goal for the Bruins. But, geez, the Bruins looked horrible the other night in their exhibition game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Clearly that one, or that momentum, is carried over, or lack thereof. Tuukka Rask, no go in this one. The label was unfit to play, so Yaroslav Halak in the net. The Celtics, meanwhile, have a 94-86 lead over the Blazers. End of the third quarter there. Jason Tatum, the leading scorer. He's got 26 points in this one, 5 of 7 from three-point territory. Gordon Hayward, Kemba Walker, and Jaylen Brown all with 14 points. So the only starter, not in double figures yet, Daniel Tice. He has 7 points so far today. Meanwhile, the Sox play the Yankees in the last of their three-game set in the Bronx tonight. Coverage will begin at 6:05 on the Shaw's and Star Market, WEI, Red Sox Radio Network, with Joe Castiglione and Will Fleming on the call. And Rob Bradford on the pregame show, 3 minutes of Bradford. He does more than that, but he's got these three-minute segments. He spits fire, okay? He gets after people. Austin Bryce will be the opener opposite James Paxton for the Yanks. Mets outfielder Yoenis Cespedes did not report to the ballpark for today's game against the Braves. The team was unable to contact Cespedes. John Heyman now reporting that Cespedes is planning on opting out of the season. ESPN's Field Yates reporting that tight end Matt Lacoste has opted out of the 2020 season. He's the 8th Patriot to do so. Big season for Lacoste last year. 13 catches, 131 yards. He had one touchdown. So not a big loss for the Pats. That's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We're right back to What You Want to Hear. More of Brian Barrett on EEI.
In the course of monitoring Eduardo after his return, we discovered that he was showing evidence of myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart. The severity of this is mild. His heart is functioning normally. Due to the fact that it is persistent and the amount of care we need to take with this and the time left in the season, he's not going to be able to come back and pitch this year. So we're going to shut him down for the season. Again, we are confident that he is going to make a full recovery and that his long-term prognosis is excellent. But the fact of the matter is that there just isn't enough time left this season to safely ramp him back up to pitching.
All right, the hits keep on coming for the Red Sox. Great news. E-Rod done for the season. I feel bad for the player, quite frankly. Unfortunate. You don't want to mess around with that. Inflammation of the heart is what he had. Myocarditis. Sucks for E-Rod because it's a guy that shows up and he ends up having COVID-19. And basically, because he has COVID-19, he gets this myocarditis and now he can't pitch for the entire 2020 season. Unfortunate. Don't blame the team whatsoever. You got to protect the player from himself. Remember a couple of weeks ago, about a week and a half ago, actually, E-Rod said, hey, I could have pitched yesterday if they allowed me to, basically saying that I feel fine. I feel okay. But the problem is the inflammation in his heart has not gone down yet. So you got to protect the player from himself at this particular point in time. Bottom line, make sure the player doesn't do anything to put himself in harm's way. So I totally understand where the Red Sox are coming from with this one. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett taking you up until Red Sox pregame at 6:05. So here's the thing with E-Rod. Last year, career high, 203 and a third last year, which was a career high. He had a 3.81 ERA, 9.4 strikeouts per nine innings. And in the second half of the season, he really came on. If you look at September, he made six starts, and in all but one of those, he went at least six innings, and in two of those, he went seven innings. So it felt like E-Rod last year had really turned a corner, and he was somebody that you were going to be able to depend on for the foreseeable future in this rotation. It's just unfortunate in my mind that the player didn't get the opportunity to back that up, to back up that season and say, okay, yeah, this is who I am going forward. I'm going to be a consistent guy in this pitching staff. I'm going to give you, and I know he couldn't have done it this year, I'm going to give you 200 innings. I'm going to give you 6 to 7 innings per game. Every time I go out there, I'm going to put the team in a position to win. He proved himself in that manner last year, and it's unfortunate this year he doesn't get the opportunity to back that up. Now, the interesting thing going forward with E-Rod is going to be to see, and Rob Bradford mentioned this yesterday, will the team now go to E-Rod and consider maybe an extension at this particular point in time? Because he's going to make a complete recovery, but maybe E-Rod, seeing what's going on in baseball right now and the fact that the owners and the players are at odds, maybe it would be wise of E-Rod to lock up a long-term extension with the Red Sox going forward. So maybe that's something to monitor going forward. Would Chaim Bloom and this organization actually look at extending Eduardo Rodriguez now? Because we know the stuff's there. His changeup is absolutely filthy. The fastball plays. So maybe it's a time to look at the player where he's looking at it as like, well, I'm losing the 2020 season. Maybe I just want to get myself some security going forward. And maybe you could consider the player, or maybe you could convince the player, rather, to sign that contract extension now. But anyway, now as we look towards the deadline, because we were all assuming that E-Rod was going to be back at some point this season. And the reason we were assuming that is because Chaim Bloom was on WEI just, 2 weeks ago saying we did expect E-Rod back in 2020. So we were all thinking he was going to be back. And at the time, I kind of thought, really? Do we know that for sure? I mean, we don't really have all the information on COVID-19, and you don't know how long it's going to take for the myocarditis to go away. So we were in a situation where I thought that was a little crazy that Chaim Bloom said that at the time, that we expect him back. Well, how do you know? The inflammation hadn't gone down. So again, I don't blame the organization for shutting him down. I feel bad for E-Rod because it felt like this is going to be his big breakout season. Last year, he turned the corner. I was really anxious and I was really excited to see what the player could do in 2020. But unfortunately, he's not going to get that opportunity now. And this is one of the things I was looking forward to this season. It was, okay, what was Devers going to do this year? And by the way, Devers has not been great. What was Bogaerts going to do this year based on what he did last year, where he went from being a really good player to an elite player in the sport last year? In my mind, I wanted to see him do it again, and quite frankly, he hasn't done it. Vasquez has been outstanding, but one of the things I was really looking forward to is to see what E-Rod could give you and to see what Eovaldi could give you, because you're still locked into two more years after this year with Eovaldi's contract, and unfortunately now we're robbed of that opportunity. But
we do expect to get him back.
I couldn't believe he said that. But anyway, so now the deadline. What does this Red Sox team do at the deadline? Obviously, they're not buyers, right? The direction was made very clear yesterday, and not that we thought they were going to be buyers, but they've lost the last two games to the Yankees, and now they're in a position where they know they're not going to get their best pitcher back at any point this season. Chris Sale's not back for 14 to 15 months, and who knows what he's going to look like coming back from the Tommy John surgery. So now when I look at the deadline, sell, 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 and sell some more. So the Brandon Workmans of the world, in my mind, that's somebody that you should be able to get a decent prospect back for. I'm not talking about one of the best prospects in a team's organization, but you should be able to get something back for Workman. Now, that's the thing about the Red Sox. They have to start to showcase these guys even more. So Workman's got to get back to, and his last outing was good, but Workman has to get back to being the pitcher he was last year. Because every time you approach the trading deadline in Major League Baseball, everybody's looking for extra arms in the bullpen. Everybody's looking for extra arms in the bullpen. So if Workman can look like the pitcher he was in 19, rather, in his next couple of outings, well, once he does that, if he gives you 3 to 4 outings where he looks really good, then just say, okay, we're not pitching him for a little bit. Let's get him out of here to get something back in return. Because Workman's not a long-term closer of any organization. I'm sorry. When you walk 45 guys in 71 innings like you did last year, you're not a long-term closer, but somebody could certainly use him out of the bullpen. Same thing with Matt Barnes. They have to get him back on track. He looks like a head case this season. One thing that I would be worried about if I was the Red Sox is the velocity's down this year. I remember last year when he's throwing his fastball, it's 96, 97 consistently, and this year he's throwing about 94, 95. Okay, so when I look at Matt Barnes, he's got to get that velocity up, and once he shows some things, he's another guy that every team is looking for extra bullpen arms. Obviously, Kevin Pillar is not part of the long-term future with this organization. He's on a one-year deal. I like the player, but if you can get something back for him, if he continues to hit the ball well, then you might as well do that. Jackie Bradley Jr., same thing. Last year that he's with the Red Sox, he's not going to be signed long-term. See if you can get something for him. Andrew Benintendi, I don't know what you'd be able to get now. Maybe another organization thinks they can save him. I just don't believe the player is that good. This is the year where Andrew Benintendi was either going to prove, is he just another guy, or is he actually the guy that was selected 7th overall out of Arkansas? Well, that idea of what Andrew Benintendi could become, that's gone out the window. He's not that guy. We've seen it, right? He's never going to be that player that everybody thought he was going to be coming out of Arkansas. So if you can get something for Benintendi, I'd move on from him as well. So anybody that is on a one-year deal or has 1 year remaining on their contract, or even Benintendi, any of those guys, move on from them, especially the relief pitchers. If you can get something for those guys, obviously it can only benefit this team going forward to get more of an injection of talent into the farm system. And I'm not telling you you're going to get like a great prospect for Brandon Workman, but at least you can get something. At least you can get something. Now, the interesting one is JD Martinez. So JD Martinez has an opt-out again after this year. It's about $19 million, and he's going to opt out. So you have one of two things you can do if you're Chaim Bloom and the Red Sox organization. You can go to JD Martinez, and you can say, hey, JD, we're going to bump up your salary a little bit and take out the opt-outs in the contract. Is that something you're interested in? Are you interested in us bumping up your salary and taking out the opt-outs so you commit to us for a couple of years? Ideally, that's what I would like to have happen, because despite the fact that the guys got off to a horrible start this year, I still believe that JD Martinez is one of the best hitters in all of Major League Baseball. And quite frankly, I believe he's going to age really well. He's 32, and that's not that old for a power hitter. We saw David Ortiz hit into his late 30s. Heck, he had one of his best seasons as a 40-year-old. So I think JD can be really good for a long period of time, and having that bat in the middle of the order is such a presence on a team. So I'd like him to be here long term. But if you go to JD and you offer him that and they say no, well, then it's, well, if Scott Boras and JD say no, we're going to opt out and test free agency. So you got to find out. So if that's the way that JD is going to go, maybe he looks at the fact, hey, Mookie, and I know they're two totally different players. I understand that the ages are different as well. But maybe he says, hey, we didn't think there was going to be a lot of money in Major League Baseball. And look at the contract that Mookie Betts just got. So maybe he's willing to test the open market and go out there and see what he can get. Maybe JD would be willing to do that now. So if that is his answer, well, then you got to trade the player. Then you have no choice whatsoever. So ideally, in my world, what I would like them to do is lock up JD Martinez long term, or at least for the next couple of years, get the opt-outs out of the contract. So this isn't a question hovering over the organization every year. I know that Dave Dombrowski wanted to get the deal done, but geez, the opt-outs in this contract are absolutely ridiculous. So that's the first thing I would look at with JD Martinez, is try to get him here. But if not, you got to move on from the player. And when I look at that, this could be a real opportunity. If you're selling on JD Martinez, this could be the guy that brings you back some decent return. Because you think about all these teams across the sport right now that are going to be competing for playoff spots that ordinarily aren't, right? Because we have eight teams that are going to get in each league. If you look at a team like, say, for example, in the National League, a team like the San Diego Padres, who they spent a ton of money over the past couple of years. Think about the guys they brought in. Eric Cosmer, Manny Machado. Heck, they gave Will Myers a big contract extension, right? So they've been willing to go out there, and they got Tatis, one of the best shortstops in baseball. That guy's been incredible. So when you look at it from a Padres perspective, they may be willing to say, hey, let's get our fan base invested. We have some guys in the farm system. Let's trade for JD Martinez. So you can actually get a bidding war going for JD Martinez and get something back that would be decent return. You look at a team like, say, for example, the Milwaukee Brewers, a team that's been close in the postseason the past couple of years. Remember, 2 years ago, they went all the way to the NLCS. So when you look at a team like the Brewers, they just lost Lorenzo Cain, who's not the same guy that he was in 15, but that's still a big bat that you take out of the lineup. And when you look at that Brewers team, pretty good squad. Still got Yelich, who is an MVP caliber player, right? We saw him 2 years ago won the MVP. He would have won the MVP last year if he didn't go down with an injury. And then, of course, Bellinger ends up getting the award. But when you look at a team like the Brewers, maybe they say, you know what? This particular season, maybe we want to go all in, try to get ourselves an extra bat. A team like the Philadelphia Phillies, they could do it. And I get it. They've only played three games this season. So quite frankly, they don't really know what they are right now. But the point being, there's going to be a lot of teams out there that are looking for that final piece that puts them over the top, that makes them a playoff team, go from a playoff team to a contender. So if you can't figure out JD Martinez, or if you can't come to an agreement with JD Martinez and Scott Boras about taking the opt-outs out of his contract and making sure he's here for the next couple of years, well, then you have to move on from the player. Then you got to move on from JD Martinez. And quite frankly, I think that JD's going to want to opt out, and I think JD's going to want to test the market, because if you look at the team he's surrounded by with right now, JD Martinez for the past couple of years has been used to playing in big games. He went to the Arizona Diamondbacks as they were in the middle of a pennant race, and he was incredible for Arizona. He comes to the Red Sox. His first year here, he wins a World Series. Last year, I mean, everything went wrong for the Red Sox, but this particular season, he's playing on an irrelevant baseball team. So he may want to go somewhere where he's going to be playing relevant baseball games. So in my mind, this is the decision that the organization is going to have to make. I believe that him and Scott Boras are going to opt out. They're going to want more than $19 million next season, and that's what he's due to make, unless the Red Sox can sweeten his deal. So I believe the Red Sox are going to have to really sit back and figure out what they can legitimately get for JD Martinez, because that may have to be the route that you go, considering the fact that if you're JD, you're going to want more money. So JD Martinez as a Red Sox, his days may be numbered here, and I would not hold it against Chaim Bloom and the organization at all if they move on from the player, because quite frankly, I can see why JD would not want to be here for the long haul, considering the fact that this looks like it could be a 2 to 3 year rebuild now with this Red Sox organization. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett taking you up until Red Sox pregame at 6:05. Coming up next, more proof that it is not going to be great for Tom Brady in Tampa. We'll do that next here on WEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Back to what you want to hear. More of Brian Barrett on EEI.
All right, if you're driving around, you're wondering how your Celtics and your Bruins are doing right now. The C's lead the Blazers 114-111. You got about 3:30 left in the fourth quarter of that one. I don't know what the hell's going on with the Celtics. They were up 20 points at one point during this game, and they let the Blazers come back in this one. Jason Tatum has 31 points. He's about to go to the free throw line. As for the Bruins, it's not pretty. They're now losing 4-1 to the Flyers. You got about 3 minutes and 20 seconds, less than that now, about 2:30 left in the third period. So the Bruins look like the first game of the round-robin tournament. They're going to lose. Although, the NHL playoffs, they have been insane, or the Stanley Cup playoffs, I should say. They've been insane already. So we've had two 12 seeds win games. The Montreal Canadiens last night beat the Pittsburgh Penguins in overtime. You also had a situation where the Blackhawks end up beating Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. And then today you had an 11 seed Arizona win. The Coyotes won. So it's crazy what's happening so far in these NHL playoffs. But the Bruins, of course, it's a round-robin situation. So if they don't end up with a 1 seed, it's not that big of a deal to me. Anyway, I wanted to get to this. So Bruce Arians this week was asked about Tom Brady picking up his system. This is via Buccaneers.com. Quote, he's way ahead of the curve. He's a very bright guy. The terminology was the big thing. And as we know, when we get together starting tomorrow, this is right before they open up training camp, we'll start to collaborate a little bit more. I think he's in a great spot right now as far as that goes. It's a dual thing. Him learning what we do, me learning what he likes. Meeting in the middle and doing a lot of different things. But I'm not going to ask the other 21 guys to learn something new when they've already had a good year and good experiences in the offense. So this is cute that Bruce Arians is saying this. He's not going to ask the other guys to learn something new because they had success last year. Well, I'll tell you this, Bruce. If Tom Brady wants you to change something to your offense, you will. Because the reason that you guys still have jobs there in Tampa Bay is because you were able to sign this guy. Remember, the whole idea of Bruce Arians going to Tampa was that he could save Jameis Winston because he was a quarterback whisperer, a quarterback guru. He couldn't do it. Jameis Winston threw more interceptions than anyone in the NFL last year. He had a 30-30 season. Okay, and now Jameis Winston, he was so bad last year, he's a backup in New Orleans. He's not even a starting quarterback anymore. Jason Light, the reason he still has a job is because he convinced ownership he could get Bruce Arians out of retirement, which he did, and then they were able to convince Tom Brady to become a member of the Buccaneers. So if Tom Brady says, yeah, I want to completely change things up, I'm sorry, reality of the situation is, Bruce, you have no power. Tom Brady is now running that organization. Bottom line, Bruce Arians has no power whatsoever in Tampa Bay anymore. Just think about things that have happened over the past month or so. Oh, Tom, or even more than a month ago now, Tom Brady gets his good buddy Rob Gronkowski to come out of retirement. Bruce Arians himself admitted he had no idea that Gronk wanted to play football this season. He had no idea that Gronk was going to be willing to come out of retirement, yet Tom Brady knew the whole time. He went to the front office and said, hey, let's trade for Gronk. Okay, and then another thing that happened over the past couple of days. Did you see who the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just picked up? And by the way, this is something I give GM Tom Brady a lot of credit for. They went out there, and a guy that had not signed with the team yet was LeSean McCoy. And I get it, he's up there in age at 31, and I know he was a healthy scratch in the Super Bowl last year, but I give Tom Brady credit for this one. 4.6 yards per carry last year, that's still pretty good. And he can catch the ball out of the backfield, which this is Tom Brady admitting he didn't have that player. He's always had that guy going back all the way to Kevin Falk, and then after that it was Danny Woodhead, and then it was Shane Vereen, and now the best of all of them, in my mind, has been James White. Now he has a pass-catching running back in LeSean McCoy, and the Bucs are not going to ask LeSean McCoy to carry the ball like crazy. That's not what he's there for. He's there to catch passes out of the backfield, and we know the Buccaneers are going to be an offense that throws the ball all over the field, so this is a safety valve
for Tom Brady. It's a great pickup for Tom Brady. I'm not saying it's a great pickup for the Bucs because Tom Brady's the one controlling things. But the reason I say that we have more evidence that things are not going to go great in Tampa is Tom Brady's going to take over that organization. Bruce Arians acting like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to ask the rest of the team to learn a new system because one guy came in. Well, that's the most important guy, and he is the reason that your team now actually has some buzz around the league. So if Tom Brady wants to change things up with Bruce Arians' offense, I'm sorry, things are getting changed up. By the way, I alluded to this Mike Sando piece in The Athletic earlier, and they ranked the tiers of quarterbacks in the NFL from tier 1 to tier 5. Tom Brady had been a tier 1 quarterback every time they had done the survey. And again, this is executives, it's coaches, it's pro personnel people, it's scouts. They go around the league and they talk to all these people and they vote as a guy at tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, tier 4, tier 5. And for the first time ever, Tom Brady was a tier 2 quarterback and not a tier 1. The guys ahead of him in tier 1 were Mahomes, Wilson, Rodgers, Breeze, and Deshaun Watson. Now, a tier 2 quarterback is somebody that can carry his team sometimes, but not as consistently. He can handle pure passing situations in doses and or possesses other dimensions that are special to elevate him above a tier 3. But he has a hole or two in his game. This is what one executive said about Tom Brady. Quote, he's cautious. He's a little more skittish in the pocket. He doesn't want to take a hit. I think the arm is still there, but a lot of in-cutting routes, I think he's to be played to his strengths. Really, really smart, knows where he wants to go with it, but he doesn't quite dominate anymore. This is an offensive play caller. I think his arm strength is diminished. And if you're around football a lot, you notice his ball placement is slipping a bit. If he throws a stop route outside, he might miss it. It's such a long throw for him that he has to juice it up more, and it's not as smooth for him, so he loses some accuracy. So this is the same thing that Greg Cosell told OMF a couple of weeks ago, or I should say a couple of months ago now. He was on with the guys on OMF, and he said one thing he noticed about Brady last year, his pocket mobility wasn't there anymore, and secondly, his ball placement wasn't there anymore. So here's the thing with Tom Brady. He knew where he needed to put the ball last year, but he couldn't put it in that specific place where he's supposed to put it. And that tells you that the player is fading a little bit. You look at the fact that Warren Moon said he didn't have his legs in the second half of the season. You think about this executive saying he needs to put his whole body into the throw. This is another personnel director. I think he can still be good, but he needs a run game. People don't realize New England has had a good run game. They had a really good defense. They were so in sync for two decades in the same system offensively. And now all of a sudden, Tom has to wait one more second because he's not 100% sure what Mike Evans is thinking. That opens him up to get hit. This is what I've been saying the whole time about Tom Brady. I've been telling you this the whole time about Brady. I don't believe this is the perfect fit in this Tampa Bay system. Because if you look at Brady, where Brady has thrived is getting the ball out of his hands quickly. That's what he's done for his entire NFL career. It's not an indictment on Brady. He's been great at it. The best quarterback in NFL history at taking what the defense gives you. But part of taking what the defense gives you most of the time with Brady in this offense that has been run here in New England is you get it out quick. Think about it. Quick pass to James White. Quick pass to Julian Edelman. That's what it's been. And when he does go down the field, like when he was throwing a Gronk in the seam all those times, it was quick play action, right? And in this Tampa Bay system, that's not what they do. In Tampa Bay, and you heard what Bruce Arians said, I'm not going to make everybody else learn a new system because we brought in one guy. That's essentially the gist of what he's saying. So they are planning on running the Bruce Arians system, at least to begin the year, until Tom says, yeah, hey, Bruce, I'm taking over. But the issue for Tom Brady is going to be, first of all, does he have the arm strength to throw the ball down the field consistently? I don't believe he has that anymore. We saw that last year when he tried to go down the field. He was not accurate with the football whatsoever. He's never been a great down-the-field thrower. That's not been his best asset of his game to begin with. I don't see it working out in Tampa in terms of him having to chuck the ball down the field, and that's what those guys do. Even though Godwin plays in the slot, it's not as if he's catching the ball close to the line of scrimmage like Julian Edelman was. Godwin had more 20-yard receptions than anybody else in the NFL last season, so he's getting down the field, as is Mike Evans. So when you do that, you have to create some time in the pocket. Brady, his pocket mobility slipped last year. He's going to have to buy time and then throw it down the football field, which opens him up to more hits, which then puts him in a category of being in a situation where he could get injured again. Because we saw last year, he was banged up for the majority of the 2019 season. And the issue with Tom Brady is he never got healthy. He had elbow tendonitis towards the end of the season, that tennis elbow. It never got better. He was dealing with it for the entire season. And now you're going to be asking Tom Brady to continue to throw the football down the field. What do you think is going to happen with his elbow in Tampa? As you get older, you get more injuries. I don't care how healthy Tom Brady is. I don't care that he has the healthiest diet out there. He has a whole system. He's got a whole book on his diet. The problem is his body's not going to hold up over a 16-game season if they ask him to continually push the ball down the football field. That's the issue I see with Tom Brady, because Bruce Arians' system is basically asking you to throw the ball down the field. So I do give Brady credit for going out there and getting him LeSean McCoy, because now they're going to be in a situation where at least Brady can dump the ball off to a back that's capable of catching it out of the backfield, because Ronald Jones is a horrible receiver. That's not what he's meant to do. And oh, by the way, in an article by Bill Barnwell a couple of weeks ago, he referenced the fact that he has actually been horrible in terms of pass protection, so that was clearly not going to work with Tom Brady either. So I do give Brady some credit for going out and getting LeSean McCoy, because at least that can take away some of the pressure of consistently having to throw the ball down the football field. But what's going to happen when Bruce Arians is like, "Oh, Tom, I don't like that. I want you to throw the ball down the football field." That's why I'm saying there's going to be in trouble in Tampa. By week three, week four, if the Bucs aren't playing the way they want to play, which is Tom Brady putting up 34, 28 points a game, whatever it is, winning with their offense, Tom Brady's going to be pissed off at Bruce Arians. This is not going to end well in Tampa for Tom Brady and Bruce Arians. I guarantee you that. I know everything looks good there now. It's not going to be long term. All right, coming up next, Red Sox baseball. The pregame show gets underway in about 5 minutes from now. Thanks to Josh for producing. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.